They knew that before being struck by lightning. I did not EMT know much about electricity, but afterward, I was taught everything I needed to know about it by spirit teachers. Ayo, don't you TMT know why I am supposed to start this business, other than that I am being told to in my visions? AI told my partners. They agreed to follow the vision with me. I was told to direct the business toward the environment, and I did that by continuing to manufacture and install the anti-fouling systems on ships. For a while we didn't TMT do well, and then the government banned the anti-fouling paint. They finally compiled enough scientific studies to realize that it was harmful to the environment. In fact, it was so dangerous that falling into Norfolk Harbor when the paint was in use required an immediate trip to the hospital to be detoxified. When the paint was outlawed, our sales climbed tremendously. In 1983, I followed the vision away from marine electronics and went back to the debugging business. I have been in that business ever since. And, of course, the visions continued. They were about kindness and finding the right components to create the centers. I volunteered my time to hospice work, whose goal is to make people comfortable while they die, usually at home. I did this because I was directed to do so by the visions. I would visit patients and tell them my story. Many of them had never heard of the near-death experience. Being so close to death themselves, however, they, 140, were very interested to hear the account of a spiritual traveler, someone who had been where they were going. Most people shun deathbed situations because they have an incredible fear of death and want to avoid it for as long as possible. I think if people spent more time around the dying, their fears of physical death would be allayed. I am not saying that death isn't TMT frightening and hard to deal with, because it almost always is, but along with the pain and fear of letting go of the physical life comes an awakening of the spiritual. As a hospice volunteer, I was involved in caregiving for the caregiver. Basically, this meant that I provided relief to the family member who was on deathbed watch. I like doing this kind of relief work because primary caregivers really need a break. They die a little bit each day and are usually overlooked by the other members of the family. Not only do they feel trapped, they often have a conflict with the person who is dying. For example, I once helped a mother who was caring for a son dying of cancer. The first thing I did on approaching the deathbed was feel the patient a TMS pulse. I did this both to check the pulse itself and to see his ahem movie. Ah, this boy a TMS ahem of yeah, was a bad one. I could see his mother standing by the bed with her hands on her hips and anger on her face. He was a captive audience to her harangue, and he was angry about it. I could feel surges of anger as she talked. Ayo, wow, AI said to the boy. Ayo, what are you so upset about? A rebuilding, 141, Ayo, you won't TMT believe it, Ayo, he said. He then proceeded to tell me about his mother a TMS guilt over his death. She somehow felt responsible for the fact that he was dying. Several times a day she stood over his bed and blamed his illness on things she had done. None of it made any sense, he told me. In the last couple of days it had become worse, because she had started blaming him for his illness, saying that he had done things to cause it. AOEATMM dying of cancer, eh, he said. Ayo, it's our TMS, not her fault or mine. EATMM just dying. A when the mother returned, we had a good discussion about guilt and death. I then told them my story, which seemed to put them at ease. Ayo, don't you TMT let death tear you apart, I told the mother. Ayo, you TMLL never forgive yourself. A on another occasion I went to a ranch-style house in a middle-class section of South Carolina. I was greeted at the door by a woman who was genuinely glad to see me. She was caring for her mother, who, she said, was a little tough to get along with. The daughter introduced me to her mother and abruptly left. I did what I always did. I took the woman a TMS wrist and felt her pulse. Right away, the ahem movie started. I could see the two women embroiled in an argument that had taken place about 10 minutes before I arrived. I couldn't TMT hear what was being said, but I could feel it, and the feeling I got was that the woman who was dying was a genuine bitch. Ayo, don't you TMT know what it was that the two of you were figting about? AI said. Ayo, but this is really no time for it. 142, this is a time to be kind instead of being an aggravating old woman. AI held her wrist again and could see that the source of this woman's anger was her husband. He had moved out one day and forced the sale of their house, leaving her with nowhere to live except her daughter at TMS house. She hated living with her daughter, and her daughter hated having her there. Ayo, don't you TMT be mad at your daughter because of what your husband did, AI said. Ayo, it isn't TMT her fault. The woman thought that her daughter had told me about the fight. I let her believe this, and we had a 2-hour discussion about caring and love. Later, when the daughter came home, I told them how I really knew about their fight, and what it was like to be dead. Nowhere has the use of my psychic abilities been more gratifying than in these deathbed situations. The dying Karna TMT afford the luxury of time, which allows a certain bluntness around the deathbed. If there is something to be dealt with, the dying prefer that it be dealt with right away. They want to get problems out in the open and solve them. For example, I once went to a home where 2 parents were caring for their daughter, who was dying of breast cancer. The daughter was married and had 2 children, a fact that I could deduce from the pictures on the walls. I went into the room where the daughter was and took her pulse. A scene flashed into my mind. I could see her at a doctor at EMS office as the doctor showed her an rebuilding 143 X-ray. He was pointing to a specific area and talking very directly to her as she held her hand over her mouth. Then I saw her leave the doctor at EMS office with no intention of returning. In another scene I could see her husband reacting in anger as his wife told him that she had cancer. She looked sick in this second scene, which made me think it was some time after the visit to the doctor. I could sense a great deal of tension as they talked. Although she seemed to need tenderness, he volunteered none, only anger. I knew what had happened, and I went straight for it. Ayo, can I ask you something, Jane? AI said. Ayo, why did you not go back to the doctor? Ayo just couldn't TMT believe it, so I ignored it, she said. She began to weep softly as she told me that she couldn't TMT face the thought of an operation. When the cancer worsened and her husband took her back to the doctor, he discovered that she already knew about the disease. By then it was too late. Her husband was so angry that he wanted nothing more to do with her. Ayo, he at TMS mad at me for not doing something about it, she said. Ayo, now he is going to be left alone with the kids and everything, and he blames me for it. Ayo, at our TMS too late to worry about it, AI said. When the parents returned, I told them why their son-in-law was angry. They knew nothing about the earlier diagnosis. All they knew was that the husband was so angry he would not TMT even come and see his wife. At least now they understood what was wrong. 144. Unfortunately, this story does not TMT have a happy ending. I went to the husband and tried to help him overcome his anger. He was not TMT interested. He resented his wife to her dying day, and as far as I know, he didn't TMT even attend her funeral. But at least I tried. As I said, I was led to do hospice work by the visions. I was told to spend time around the dying so that I would understand it from the perspective of others. By doing this work I learned that stress reduction was the key to improving a persona's death as well as life. Sometimes I would marvel at the way things had gone since I was struck by lightning. Here it was, 13 years later, and I was just beginning to feel as though I had climbed out of the grave. Physically I looked okay, although I really wasn't TMT fine at all. I couldn't TMT walk very far or fast without having to stop to catch my breath. I avoided stairs, mainly because climbing a couple of flights was as taxing to me as running a mile is to most people. I would stand at the top of the stairs and sweat profusely, panting to catch my breath. My mental state had improved greatly. When the accident first happened, I would sit and jabber all day. If I wasn't TMT talking about my near-death experience, I was talking about the mission the spirit beings had given me, the one that called on me to build the centers. I couldn't TMT get them out of my mind, So that was all that came out of my mouth. I still talked about the experience a lot, but I no longer went on and on the way I used to. Still, the visions were always with me. I was driven to complete the centers as quickly as I could. I knew how, rebuilding, 145, to make the visions real, except for the bed, which was still a mystery to me. The transducers that had appeared to me in the vision were revealed as resembling two hockey pucks put side by side. Other components of the bed appeared in these visions as well, and I was gradually recognizing what they were and finding them. The trick was to make sure that I had all the components and that they went together in the right way. I had been given a deadline of 1992 to complete both the bed and the centers, a deadline I felt I would meet without trouble since I was being guided by the visions. Nevertheless, the accident and all the air baggage that accompanied it weighed heavily on my personal life. Sandy and I finally divorced when the constant talk about the experience and the need to build the centers became too much for her. I couldn't EMT blame her. Near-death experiences are hard on couples. With the constant visions and the psychic developments, added to the physical damage I had suffered, we had a sure-if-eerie recipe for a failed relationship. Despite all this, my life was in relatively good shape. As I said earlier, I was just beginning to feel right again. But before I could even stand up and dust myself off, I fell right back down. 13, heart failure. It was May of 1989, and I had been working too hard for a couple of years. When I wasn't EMT in Charleston or nearby Aiken working my businesses, I was in Washington, D.C., installing anti-bugging devices in the Pentagon. Managing this part of my business alone kept me busy at least 60 hours a week. In addition, I had the workload placed on me by the visions to contend with. To learn about kindness, I was told to continue my work as a hospice volunteer. I did that with no regret. I found great pleasure in helping people at the time of their greatest need. Even family members sometimes reject the dying. Not because they don't EMT love them, but because they can't EMT accept the sad facts of death. For example, I noticed that one man had trouble approaching the bed of his mother, who was quite aged and dying of cancer. He and his family would come to visit her twice a day, but after a while the man would stand out in the hall while the rest of the family talked to his mother. 148. Finally, I approached the man. He was reluctant to talk at first. Almost hostile. Then I broke the ice by saying, "Ayo, you seem to be mad at your mother." He looked at me as if I had revealed his deepest thoughts, but that wasn't EMT the case at all. I think anyone who looked at this man could have seen the anger in his face. He was mad at death and angry at his mother for accepting it by checking into a hospice. He didn't EMT like the idea that death would rob him of his mother, who was one of his closest companions. In a strange, almost inexplicable way, he felt as though she were rejecting him. "Ayo, don't EMT want her to give up because EATMLL never see her again," he told me, emotion welling in his voice. I told him that what he was doing was natural. I had seen it before. He had fallen back into the role of a child. Although he was an adult with a family and a good job, he was still his mother EMS little boy. And now that little boy was coming out and saying that if he didn't EMT get what he wanted, he wasn't EMT going to talk to his mother anymore. "Ayo, the problem here is this," I told him. "Ayo, your mother knows it's EMS time to die, and she is facing it with courage. You need to stand with her because there is nothing you can do to change it. It is her time." Then I told him about near-death experiences and my own story. He was enthralled to hear death being presented as the beginning of a great adventure and not the end. It was a healing moment for this man, who went back into the room and became a good son for the remainder of his mother EMS life. 149. It was a learning experience for me, too, and learning is why the spirit beings wanted me to work as a hospice volunteer. I spent an average of 20 hours a week working in hospices and nursing homes, but sometimes quite a bit more. When patients were in their final hours, I would stay at their bedsides around the clock if they wanted me. That meant losing a lot of sleep, which was not EMT really as important as the lessons to be learned from the dying. Other parts of the visions drove me into overtime as well. I had been building versions of the bed since 1979, but I was still studying the components. I had found all of them by now but did not EMT quite understand how to put them all together. I continued to work hard on completing this puzzle, and the only way I knew to do that was to stay true to the visions. Talk of these visions was becoming a burden to my friends. All too often I heard them say that I was crazy. For a long time they said it behind my back. Then they finally got to the point where they did not EMT care if I heard it or not. After one particularly rough week during which I could hardly keep my eyes open, a close friend said, "Ayo, you want to get some sleep. Forget these visions and get on with your life. They are just in your way." I could not EMT have agreed more. The visions were in my way. I wanted them to go away more than anyone, but it wasn't EMT that easy. I just couldn't EMT ignore them. All of this combined to make me work harder than I should have. I began to falter. At first I found myself constantly exhausted. I would wake up tired and stay 150 that way until I went to bed at night. Thinking it was a nagging case of the flu, I tried to sleep it off. I rebounded briefly why, but as soon as I resumed my arduous schedule, I began to slide again. I was driving hundreds of miles each week between my home and the Washington, D.C. area. I felt bad physically, but I had to keep working hard for the survival of my business. Still, I knew something was seriously wrong because my lungs felt clogged and I coughed all the time, but nothing came up. The severity of the situation finally hit me when I found myself riding to Charleston with my partner Robert Cooper. I was pouring sweat. I lay down on the back seat, hoping that a little rest would make me feel better. It didn't EMT. For the remainder of the day, I couldn't EMT sit up without severe feelings of dizziness. "I must have pneumonia," I said to Robert. I went to bed for a couple of days and actually felt better. However, as soon as I got up and tried to resume normal activities, my lungs got that hard feeling and I got worse. I was sure I had a strain of pneumonia or the flu that I couldn't EMT fight off. "Aothea TMLL, get rid of it in the emergency room," I said to another of my partners. She knew that going to the hospital was a big step for me because, as I always joked, "Aodonia TMT like to go to hospitals because every time I go to one, I die." She helped me walk to East Cooper Hospital, which was only a few blocks away. By the time I arrived, I felt as though I had run a marathon. At the admissions desk I completed a form, Heart Failure 151E, detailing my medical history, which took all of my remaining energy. Finally, the person at the admissions desk sent me straight to an examination room while my partner filled out the admissions forms. "Ayo, think I just have the flu," I said to the examining physician, who looked with horror at my medical history form. I was fighting for breath by then, and it seemed as though my lungs weighed a ton. He listened to my heart and lungs with his stethoscope. His eyebrows went up a little as he did this. Then he called for a nurse and had her bring in an electrocardiogram machine. He and the nurse quickly hooked the electrodes up to my chest and ran off a tape that looked like one of those graphs of the stock market. He examined the tape for a moment and then sent it off to be examined more carefully by a specialist. He didn't EMT leave my side. He helped me on with my shirt, watching me all the time in a way that made me nervous. When the specialist at TMS report came back, he left the curtained off area where I was sitting to read it. When he returned he seemed even more nervous than when he had left. "Ayo, do you want me to tell you the truth?" he asked. "Ayo, nothing but the truth," I said. "Ayo, well, you do have an infection that is causing pneumonia," he said. "Ayo, but I am afraid that you are almost in cardiac arrest. If we don't EMT get you into this bed and off to intensive care, the TMLL be dead in about 45 minutes. A 152. I appreciated his bluntness and thought that it showed real courage on his part. Most doctors beat around the bush before telling a patient he is doomed. But this one did not EMT mess around, probably because of the severity of my condition. I suspect by the way he hovered close to me that he thought I would die of fright, but what did I have to be frightened of? I had died once already and liked it. I was ready to go back. It was a relief to know that in less than an hour I would be dead. As the doctor hovered close to me, I decided to bring some levity into the room. I smiled at him. "Ayo, well, damn, doc," I said. "Ayo, don't you TMT you think I ought to lie down?" For the next several hours I became the center of attention. An IV was started, and I was given massive amounts of antibiotics. Doctor after doctor came and listened to my heart. I was treated to a variety of tests, including a painful one known as cardiac catheterization, in which they ran a tube up to my heart through an artery in my leg and squirted dye directly into its chambers so they could view it on a television screen. They only did the test to see precisely what shape my heart was in. They already knew what the problem was. I had picked up a staph infection through a cut on my hand. At first, the infection made me feel like I had the flu. When I ignored it, I got pneumonia. Then it headed straight for my weakest spot, my lightning-damaged heart. There it settled into my aortic valve, chewing it up until it couldn't EMT seal anymore. The lightning had already reduced my heart TMS pumping ability by almost 50%. Now, with the valve, 153, damaged and leaking, I was drowning in my own blood. As a result, I was in great pain. I was gasping for breath, coughing up blood as I struggled for air. The antibiotics were making me sick, and the constant prodding and poking of the medical staff seemed more like a nuisance than a help. Still, I was in a good mood, keeping a smile on my face through all of the grim proceedings. I knew I was going to die, and I wasn't EMT unhappy with that. "Ayo, you know, doc, death is okay. It's RTMS just getting there that hurts. Ayo, excuse me?" I said, one of the doctors, looking up from his clipboard. "Ayo, EATM died before and it was really quite pleasant," I said. "Ayo, it's RTMS for getting there that hurts. Ayo can see that you have died before," he said, looking at my medical records. "Ayo, people don't you TMT often survive something like being struck by lightning. Not when their heart stops for as long as yours did. AOEATMM sorry I did survive, doc. It was great over there. I didn't TMT want to come back. AO don't you TMT worry," I said the doctor. "AOEATMLL try our best to keep you alive. AO you don't you TMT understand," I said to the doctor. "AO want to die. EATM been there and it RTMS beautiful. Since I came back it seems as though it have been in confinement. In heaven were me free to roam the universe." The doctor looked at me for a moment and saw the smile on my face. I think it unnerved him because he immediately waved to a nurse at the station outside the room. 154. "Ayo nurse, he said. Ayo take Mr. Brinkley at EMS temperature, please. I think he has a fever. I made it through the night. My good friend Franklin had called my father, and he started a telephone chain. By morning, my family was gathered in the hospital. Soon the room was filled with people who could barely contain their emotions at the sight of me. Illness has its interesting moments, and one of them is the way you are regarded by other people. I had experienced stares of disbelief when I was struck by lightning. But this time I was conscious of my surroundings and able to enjoy much more the effect my appearance had on others. It was almost as though I were a movie screen and the people who came into the room were watching the gruesome parts of The Exorcist. I can't EMT blame them, because what they saw was pretty frightening. I was charcoal blue right down to my fingernails. The sheet around my head was stained with the blood I coughed up. Every breath was a struggle because my lungs were filling with fluid, and they rattled when I exhaled. It was eerie for people to be around a deathbed whose occupant was so cheerful. Still, I couldn't EMT help it. I told my dad that it was just a matter of perspective. "Ayo for you at RTMS like I am leaving NDATMLL never be back," I told him. Ayo, for me it's RTMS like I am going home. A nurse came in with forms for me to sign. I looked at them and realized they were consent forms that would, 155, allow surgery to be performed on my heart. A couple of surgeons had told me that the only way I could survive would be if they tried to replace my aortic valve with an artificial one. I told them that I was ready to die and did not EMT want to have surgery, but they ignored me. They had the forms prepared anyway, assuming that I would change my mind. Ayo, ain't EMT gonna sign them, AI said. Aoe at EMM gonna let God decide this one. A two surgeons came into the room. They had stern, matter-of-fact looks on their faces as they stood by the bed. One of them laid out the facts while the other stood and watched. Ayo, the longer you wait, the less chance you have of surviving surgery, Ayo, he said. Ayo, good, because there is no TMT going to be any surgery, AI said. Ayo, if we don't your TMT operate on you within about 10 hours, your heart will be too weak for us to do surgery, Ayo, he persisted. Ayo, great, AI said. Ayo, then YATMLL get to die. AI saw my father in the corner of the room talking to Franklin. Soon she pulled away and left the room. Ayo, YATMLL leave the forms here, I said the surgeon. Ayo, you can sign them if you change your mind. A in a few minutes, Franklin came back. She spoke to my dad for a few seconds, and then they both came over to the bed. Ayo, Franklin just called Raymond, A my father said. Ayo, he at EMS on his way. A156. I was glad to hear that he was coming. He had been in Europe for several weeks on a speaking tour. He didn't EMT know until that call that I was in the hospital or even that I was sick. According to Franklin, he was catching a flight from Georgia and would arrive in a couple of hours. I would have a chance to see him one more time before I died. And so we waited. I don't yet EMT remember much of what was said, but I do remember what I was thinking. Now I won't EMT get a chance to finish the centers. I was supposed to have one completed by 1992, but it doesn't EMT look as though yet EMM going to make it that far. Today I am going to die. After a couple of hours had passed, Moody came into the room. What he saw clearly shocked him. There were four people standing around the bed with grim and frightened expressions as I made jokes and tried to lift their spirits. Moody stood with them and tried to act nonchalant. Ayo, you arena TMT looking so great, Ayo, he said in his gentle manner. Ayo, the doctors here can fix you up. Ayo, don't you TMT want to get fixed up, AI said. Ayo, just want to die. A being the good doctor, Moody persisted. Ayo, is there anything I can do to make your last hours more pleasant then? Ayo, he asked. Ayo, there is one thing you can do, AI said to Moody. Ayo, you can go down to Arbia TMS and get me a roast beef sandwich with lots of horseradish. I want to go out on a cholesterol rush. A we all laughed, and I laughed so hard that blood began running out of my nose. Then Moody and I began talking about how we met and about all the people we had talked to. He said that all near-death experiencers claim they no longer have a fear of death, but that this was the first time he had actually seen that lack of fear demonstrated. Ayo, how come Whitman not afraid? Ayo, he asked. The answer came easily. Ayo, because living on Earth is like being forced to go to summer camp. You hate everyone and you miss your mama. Moody. YATMM going home. A Moody tried to console my family and friends. I could hear them talking, but I wasn't EMT paying much attention at this point. I was organizing things in my mind, trying to determine if there were any loose ends that I had to tie up before leaving this world. Finally, Moody came back to the bedside. Ayo, you don't yet EMT have to die, Ayo, he said. Ayo, stay for me. I need your help. A Moody had a wonderful and understanding smile on his face and a pleading tone in his voice. It made me feel wanted and needed, a basic human desire to which I found myself susceptible. Ayo, okay, AI said. Ayo, give me the forms. A as soon as I signed them, the surgical team took over. Someone cut a hole in my neck and inserted a tube. Someone else cut a hole in my leg and inserted a tube that they pushed all the way to my heart. By then I was so weak that the doctors at East Cooper decided to transport me to Roper Hospital, where they perform more high-risk surgeries. They kept me there overnight, hoping I would improve, but when I didn't EMT, they decided to go ahead with the surgery. I don't EMT remember much after arriving at Roper. I remember a nurse coming in to shave me,